The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. It is Friday. Match day minus one for Canada. Almost at Saturday. I don't know what day of the week it is at this point. Almost getting set for Canada tomorrow. We'll be hearing from Jesse Marsh later today and his pre-match press conference. We'll get all into Canada later today. Amy Walsh is here. There's Dan Wong. There's Jimmy Brennan. I'm James Sharman. Okay, so today we have some really intriguing matchups, actually. Now, by the time you hear this on Sirius XM, Australia, Egypt will probably be into their first half, or just maybe late first half, halftime. That's a fascinating tilt, actually. But the one most people are watching will be Argentina, Cape Verde, later today. Obviously, a fascinating tilt, and just keep it respectable. Let's just say the way Argentina's playing, Cape Verde, by the time this game finishes, I'll know how to pronounce it properly. I do apologize.
I don't think you will. I've been working on diaspora.
There you go.
For the last 24 hours.
It's not diaspora.
Well, I think it could be said that way, but you know, I have my own lexicon. So.
Laura Bryan called you out. Hi, Laura.
Yeah, she did. And then pirate lawyer too said some McGill degrees are better than others. And I'm like, oh, you
at least you
bastard.
Have a McGill degree.
Well,
I just have the 1 year.
That's right. That's right.
And then it's Colombia against Ghana. That's the late one today, which is also a really fascinating tilt. But listen, let's be honest. The story today is about what happened yesterday. And that is, well, a number of games, obviously. Spain smashing Austria 3-0, looking really good once again. Switzerland beating Algeria in Vancouver 2-0 in the late one. But in Toronto, Portugal finding a way to beat Croatia 2-1 in some match, some drama. And the scenes were unbelievable before, during, and after. Jimmy, you were there. You were in the stadium. I have to say, I got no complaints about my World Cup experience. It's been brilliant. But I was seriously jealous last night, some FOMO about not being in that stadium. It looked unbelievable. It sounded unbelievable. Football aside, like, what was it like?
It was incredible. That was the first match that I ever went to at a World Cup. And just the whole build up, the walk to the stadium, it was electric inside. It really was. And then obviously to see two absolute legends, Ronaldo and Modric, gracing the field at BMO Field was unbelievable. I mean, I remember we were just standing there talking. I was like, could you have ever imagined that we'd be watching two legends grace the pitch here at BMO Field in a World Cup round of 32 game? And it was just everything about it was amazing. I mean, we left the stadium, I think everybody did with just a smile on their face because the game was so good as well. Yeah. It was end to end. The tactical side of the game was incredible because where we were sitting, you could see the movement and defending, the attacking behind the north stand, the goal on the north side. But it was electric, man. What an atmosphere. And it's always nice to hear the managers and the players give compliments to Toronto and the city and the people and how nice they were. They seemed to love it. But the game was incredible. It was just such a great standard.
I mean, we've seen big players at that venue before, but not in a really important match like this. And that's the whole point, right? It's the occasion as well, isn't it? Yeah, you got to see Modric, Ronaldo, and one of their last international gap matches, quite possibly, but in a World Cup round of 32. I mean, you've been, Jim, you played big clubs, big stadiums, big matches. How did it feel atmosphere-wise? Did it feel like a football match should feel? If that was being played in England or France or wherever, is that how it sounded, felt?
Yeah, it did. It was loud. It was loud. Both fans were just engaged you could tell they're, you know, them, and then the Portuguese and the Croatians, it was a lot of Canadians, right, that are whether first generation or they've moved here. But they were educated. They understood the game. They knew when to cheer, when to get their team going, and when to start the chants. And, you know, nothing was fake about it. It was all just natural. And it was beautiful. And I think, you know, it's like everything. When you walk into a stadium, big occasion, big atmosphere, it's tense. You can smell the grass. You can smell the game. And it was, I think everybody was just smiling ear to ear throughout the whole match. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful moment.
Jimmy, you also had the diary of a soccer broadcaster yesterday too, because you were on TSN. You were just telling us off air, you like skedaddled after your TSN on air down to the stadium. Like, you were fully ensconced in World Cup. So your buildup didn't start just when you got downtown. It was like you were World Cupping all day yesterday.
World Cupping.
I was World Cupping. Yeah, it was great, because I think the game that I was doing, the Spain game, which, by the way, when we start talking about that, was incredible as well. That mm-hmm. was off the chart. Watch out for them, by the way. And then
it was like, that's who Portugal get next, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you. After watching Spain, Spain's in World Cup mode now. They're in knockout. They're playing knockout mm-hmm. football. Oh. But it was funny, because as soon as it was in my ear, the producer goes, "Okay, Jimmy, we're done. We're passing it over to people at the Toronto Stadium." My tie was already half off. I was sprinting to the change room, suit off, pair of shorts, shirt on. I ran out the studio with like those, you know, those cloths to take your makeup off. I'm taking makeup off in the Uber. Guy's looking at me like, "What the hell's wrong with this guy? What is he doing?" And then we ended up getting down there. Got down there at a decent time, but trying to get closer to the stadium was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And because I was trying to get dropped off at like Bathurst and in front, like stacked, just so I could walk down.
Yeah.
But we were rammed. It was chock-a-block. So I ended up walking from the Sky Dome all the way over. And it was power walking. And lucky I'm a power walker.
Yeah, your hand weights too.
Yeah, I had my walk in the morning. Yeah. And it was like, you know those speed walkers when they're squeezing their ass and feet up? I was like that, full on march to the stadium. Excuse
me. I'm World Cupping, people.
Yeah, World Cupping ticket. Show my ticket. So then I get in there. I'm already a hot mess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was it. Once you kind of settled down and had a beer, then that's when you realize, you're like, okay, it's game time now. Just even watching the players come out and they all go around the center circle and just being able to see that, because you watch on TV or you're on a panel and you're watching and you're seeing what they do. But when you see it live and you get to experience the whole thing, it's a different class.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, you've been whining about being stuck in a TV studio or World Cup and not having that experience. But in some ways, that's good, because it built up your anticipation for the moment, for the climax. You climaxed at the right time in the biggest match.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Why? Why would you say that?
Sharms just wanted to say climax on satellite radio.
Yeah.
It was a relevant word, I think, an appropriate word.
It was. But
Jimmy, I want to ask you about what you were wearing. I saw a post that Jess put up, and it was you and Jess and her sister Marisa and her partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were sporting Canada kit. So you've been sport. Do you have all Canada kits? And was that well thought out? And was that on underneath your suit at TSN to make the quick change easier?
Mm-hmm. I had my shorts underneath my suit. Right. Pulled them straight off. No, but I was thinking, because it was so hot in Toronto here yesterday. It was ridiculous. Yeah. And you know, when you wear a cotton t-shirt and you're sweating like a lunatic, and I was like, okay, I need to wear a jersey today. And then I'm not wearing Portugal. I'm not wearing Croatia. So I ended up wearing a Canada jersey from O'Neill's. Do you know that O'Neill Canada jersey? Retro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I ended up wearing that. I was like, I'm going Canadian, pure Canadian today as a fan, neutral.
Love it.
And I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah. The white was a good choice. I liked it.
Oh, yeah. I was going to wear the black Canada jersey, and I was like, no, because if the sun beats on me, I'm going to melt. I'd be like an ice cream cone.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I wonder, Dubs, you know, that experience yesterday, and we heard Roberto Martinez talk about it, and we heard the players talk about the experience. That might actually really help Toronto FC recruit players to say, this is actually a really great place to play football. Now, listen, it's the World Cup, I get it. But regardless, when that thing's packed, with or without the expansion to 43,000 fans, whatever it is, it's a great place to play football.
Yeah, it's such a good point and something that hadn't even occurred to me because I'm still World Cupping myself, not as hard as Jimmy, but I'm still full verb World Cupping, not in it, not projecting long term and thinking about like the ripple effects and the positive momentum I think that this is going to have on the soccer landscape. But I want to hit on one thing first, is that you feel vindicated given the fact that Roberto Martinez called out Toronto Stadium as being a fabulous place to play. You're like, you called it, you got the hate on socials, and now you're like chest puffed out. You're like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not just that, but I did a little video before the World Cup from BMO saying how much I like BMO Field, how it reminds me of the old English football stadiums, right? Mm-hmm. And I got hammered by it. Listen, in fairness, a lot of people agree, but I got a lot of hate for some, I don't know why, a lot of hate saying, I don't know.
Because you're unlikable.
Maybe because I'm unlikable. It could be that. Yeah.
It's your bucket hat.
But it was real vitriol, though. And it's like, what? I just said I left a stadium, right? And now Roberto Martinez says, actually, not only is it a great stadium, but it reminds him of old Premier League stadiums.
Yeah.
Old Roberto Martinez, even at Wigan, I liked you. A little bit less at Everton because I'm a Liverpool fan. But I like you a lot, Roberto Martinez.
Yeah. He's not the first to say it, too. You know, like there's been a couple of other people talked about the quality of the grass and just the quality of the venue and the feel when you're in that. So it hadn't occurred to me to project forward and think about recruitment, whether, you know, your NSL, CPL, but specifically World Cup players, those tier one elite footballers in the world, opening their eyes to what Canada is in the way of football, right? And so you expose them to a top quality facility. And Jesse Marsh has talked about this. We have talked about this, how Canada needs to develop more soccer-specific stadiums. We need to invest in soccer-specific infrastructure in this country. But you've got one in Stade Saputo that Ireland got to see in a preparatory match versus Canada. That needs a lot of work. We know that. Garber was on hand talking about the Big O. We'll see what leads or what happens there. But BMO, Toronto Stadium, fabulous place. We've got to do something about BC Place and the turf. You know, we've got the temporary grass that's in for the World Cup. But I wouldn't be surprised to see if a lot of heads were turned in terms of what Canada has to offer. Like people are all of a sudden waking up to what Canada is.
I wonder if that helps Vancouver's situation. If there's some people with lots of money in their pockets saying, you know what, there's a hotbed here, untapped hotbed of football. Mm-hmm. And I could get involved in that. Is there any team available, I wonder? Oh, the Whitecaps. And BC Place, tell you what, not to dismiss BC Place here, because that has been incredible as well. With grass laid down there, when that's packed, that is a really great facility. And
looks,
we've heard, like
amazing.
I said, looks amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Numerous players and coaches have said that's a really great place to play football.
Yeah. And Jimmy, you can probably speak to this as well with your MLS experience and your experience playing for Canada. Claire Rustad was talking about this on the panel yesterday, friend of the show of the broadcast and Footy Prime. She was at Toronto Stadium for that match. And she was saying that a lot of players and just watching the game on TV in the NFL type stadiums, which are state of the art, but it removes you from the match. So what you're talking about, Jimmy, where like all of the senses are lit up when you're at a football match, when you're at something like that, where, you know, the spectacle is incredible, but everything contributes to the feel that you have as a fan. And it's all of the senses. So when you're closer to the game and it's the sights and the sounds and it's the feeling that it conjures, when you're close to the action, there's nothing that you can really trade for that, is there?
Yeah, no, it's that's all a part of it, right? It's not just the match, it's everything that comes with it, the atmosphere, and like I said before, the smell. And you know, that's important, because that's actually part of the fan engagement, right?
You yeah.
feel like they're a part of what's going on. And in some stadiums, when you're far away, and you know, especially those ones that have like the track around them, or you know, some of the NFL stadiums where you are a little bit further away, you don't really get that atmosphere and that sense that this is, I feel a part of this right now. And that's why England was so beautiful, because all the stadiums there were, you know, you're right on top of the pitch and you feel like you're in there, or you feel like you're a manager, you're that close, you can tell the players what to do, but obviously they're not listening. But it's true. I mean, with BC Place, I've been there a few times, and I like when you get in and there's nobody in there, it does feel a little bit cold. Maybe it's because of the seats that drives me crazy, because they're like that gray color and it looks kind of drab.
Yeah.
But I like, but when it's packed in there and it's a good atmosphere, it really is a great venue, especially with the grass being in there. Because as you guys know, the football plays completely different as well on grass than what it does on turf. So the speed of play is quick, and you know, the movement's a lot sharper and faster. But you're right, we do definitely need more stadiums in this country, that's for sure. I mean, look, if the Rough Riders can have a beautiful stadium, why can't another soccer team have a nice stadium? They only use that one 8 times a year.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking, Jimmy, it was the first time in maybe the entire, or at least what I've seen, that they actually needed hydration breaks yesterday.
Oh, yeah, it was hot. Mm-hmm. It was really, really hot.
Like, I wouldn't want to be your underwear yesterday.
I don't wear them.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. There we go.
That poor pair of shorts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you mean poor socks.
And shoes. Yeah. And people below you on the concourse.
The drip.
Oh, it might rate my eye.
Rate my eye.
Why is this guy's socks shoes drenched?
our friend from CPL, Charlie O'Connor, he said that BMO was the only non-Mexican stadium at this World Cup built specifically for footy, and it showed. Yeah. I then have an advert for some satin boxer shorts on the feed.
Nice.
Our friend Tony from Hamilton has a bit of an insult to me, well, an insult to me, but the old good-natured banter with me. always fun. Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Appreciate that. $150 million to recreate a relic is probably where the anger comes from. Okay, good. Thanks, Leafs Dog. Toronto Stadium is a hole. It wouldn't serve well as a lower tier Division One football stadium, from MD, who knows nothing about football, apparently. Mm. Anyway, I'm just going through the comments here. Wow. It's Jesus.
I just like when world-class managers are giving it a compliment.
Yeah. I'll take their opinion over others.
Yep.
Yeah.
But you know what? Going back to you're talking about the water breaks, and I know we've talked about it, but then when you actually see it, it drives me crazy. It really does. You know, I think, in my opinion, if it's a water break, the players head towards the center circle, quit manager, come out, drop the water, drink, fellas, and then get back off. Because you could see the Bosnian manager, they were under pressure for 20 minutes, and you notice like that first 15 minutes is back and forth, two teams trying to figure out. Portugal starts getting momentum. They're getting control of this game now. And all of a sudden, water break. Now the Bosnian coach is out there, and he's got
everybody in.
Our Croatian coach. He's there now in the middle going over tactics, changing everything. And I'm like, that's not right. That is not right. Your preparation was during the game. Coach, during the game. Your preparation, was before the game, the buildup. But you should not be able to now, after 21 minutes, tactically reset everything. And then you see the momentum change. We've seen it so many times. Croatia goes down the other way, and I was like, oh, my God, they're about to score here. And it's like little things that they're allowed to do. But I don't think the manager should be able to talk to the players during that water break. Let the players stay on the pitch, give them their water, do your commercials, and then get the game going again.
And just a reminder,
it is unfair.
Yeah, Jimmy, just a reminder, remember when Craig, I don't know if you remember this, but Craig and I went a little deep dive, and NBA has a 2.5 minute break for their quarters on local games, 3 minutes for national games. Basically, that 3 minute break is a quarter. Like, it's a changeover. And it really has changed the nature of the game. And you mentioned Bosnia. You misspoke, but the U.S.-Bosnia game, Bosnia literally was when Balogun got the red card. Bosnia was all over them. And then all of a sudden, there was this hydration break, and the U.S. came back. And it's changing matches that wouldn't normally be in this space. And to your point, I think you're absolutely right. It should just be, hey, drink some water, 30 seconds, that's it. Like, there shouldn't be this literally opportunity to re-coach, re-manage, and a break for the players. I think it's ridiculous.
I think, and part of the problem is because, you know, when you play the game, and Dubs, you know this, you work so hard to get that momentum, and you take over the tempo and the rhythm of a game. And then eventually when you get there, you're like, okay, let's get going. And then it's, no, hydration break. And you're like, fuck. You know, we just turned the tide here, and we're going at it. Mm-hmm. And now they get to reset.
There was a conversation at FIFA to do away with these things for the knockout rounds, and they discussed it quite seriously, I understand. But in the end, didn't fly, and they're keeping them. And I'm sure part of that is because the broadcasters have deals in place and ad space sold already for them to suddenly lose that revenue. Yeah. You can imagine the litigation, can't you?
Yeah, and if we're talking, I saw the number for Fox. It was $250 million, so $250 million that they've sold in commercial time. So if people want to know why, that it's $250 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so they're never going to walk that back. They can't.
You think
right?
It's here for good? For good,
no,
for good?
I just mean for the tournament.
For this tournament,
yeah. Right? Yeah. I hope after that common sense does prevail, because that should really be the approach.
Yeah,
like the Croatia Portugal match in Toronto, where it's super humid, it's, you know, dead hot. Like, of course you need to have those breaks to protect the welfare of the players, but it shouldn't be dictated by how much commercial revenue the broadcasters are going to be able to turn. Mm-hmm. And then, like, to Jimmy's point.
Yeah. Sorry, Dubs. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was going to add a couple things to Jimmy's point about the momentum. That's another mental aspect of the game that the players have to juggle and manage and navigate, right? It's really tough to do that because, as Jimmy said, you work so hard to try to swing it, and then you have something manufactured that just dropped in that you have to contend with after the fact. And you're like, what the hell? Like, we just worked for 15 minutes to gain this, to put it in our favor, to tilt the field towards the opposition, or to, you know, absorb the pressure, however you're lined up tactically and however you're attacking the match. It's been robbed of you, or it's been taken from you. And then I had another point. Oh, yeah. Just to finish on the hydration breaks, I think what the coaches are doing is they're leveraging the opportunity in front of them. Like, yes, it's up to FIFA to disengage the players from the touchline and any potential tactical tweaks or adjustments that the coaches are making. So, yeah, Jimmy, I think it's a brilliant idea. Like, yes, you want water. You need water at this point to protect the players. And if you've, you know, you've got a deal in place with the broadcasters, but it shouldn't be an occasion for the coaches to try to adapt and to change the game at that point.
But you know what's going to happen, though, right? If you ban the coaches from talking to the players, and only the trainers or the water boys, you're going to get Thomas Tuchel suddenly throwing a tracksuit on and pretending to be a water boy.
I mean,
like you know, maybe part his hair in a different direction. Pretty tough, I Thomas Tuchel.
No, it can't.
Why is that water boy 48 years old and balding?
It looks really familiar. Yeah. The kind of thing that Mourinho would do, isn't it? That's the kind of thing he'd do.
Yeah, or there's going to be notes on the water bottles, right? Yeah. Like, they'll figure out a way to do it, but at least it won't be as overt.
A speaker water bottle. And he's just talking through the speaker in the middle of, oh, that's a good idea. We could do that. Back to the game, though. So Ronaldo, yeah, he gets a start. And of course, he scores the penalty. Right bang down the middle. Give him credit for that. It was a good penalty. And Portugal were looking really, really great. That goal, Jimmy, that was ruled offside for Ronaldo, it's a shame. Because my God, that touch and that finish, when we criticized him for being too old and yada yada, he still got it. In many ways. And the touch, I'm not sure the touch ever really goes. Maybe you lose the speed, the ability, the dexterity. But that touch, man, that was gorgeous.
Yeah. fun to watch him. I mean, he's a different player now than what he was when he was younger, right? Mm-hmm. He's making those runs in behind and his movement, but now it's more a little bit more calculated. And I mean, there was a point when I looked over and I was like, they got to get this guy off. Like, he's doing absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, the guy does that, and then he ends up scoring a penalty and he gets man of the match. And I was like,
Yeah, man of the match is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I think Liao should have got man of the match, shouldn't he?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Brilliant. Oh, wow.
Good selection. Now, should we get to the late stuff? The drama, the theater?
Yes.
Okay. The equalizer and how is it Snicko? Snicko's the what they use, right? They use it in cricket originally. And it's a little ability to pick up any sound, so deflection. So, Dubs, do you want to break down what happened there on that equalizing goal at the death that didn't count?
Equalizing.
Yeah. Right. That, equalizing. Guardiola eventually.
No, you did. I just was making like it wasn't because it didn't count, but yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The,
oh,
the
so
perceived equalizer.
Yeah, perceived
right.
equalizer, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd been out at Campbell's soccer game, and so we came back and we got to see... Yeah, we got to see my youngest boy, his game, and then we got to see the end of the match, including however many minutes of stoppage time that was. It ended up being like 13 or 14, right at the end of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you saw Croatia push and push and push, and they had opportunities, and then this ball comes in, and I'm not sure what Croatian player goes up for it, but it's deemed to be another touch on the ball. So like the phase of play is reset. So off the initial cross, the player on the far side is in an onside position. And then as the play at the, it falls to the Croatian player that you think gets a touch to it, then the Croatian player is in an offside position. And then it goes back across, but in between it touches a Portuguese player's head. And it's deemed that that is not enough to kind of reset it because it's not intentional. There's no clear possession. So there's a couple of things to unpack here. So it's the double touch. So initially onside off the cross, it's reset because it's off of the head of a Croatian player. So then you're in an offside position, but then that could be negated by a touch from the defending team or the opposition if it's deemed to be deliberate. So there's a couple things happening, Sharms, and I may be overcomplicating things because there's the chip in the ball that says there was another touch by the Croatian player, which then puts the play offside. The goal is ruled out because of that. But then there's the additional element to it, a wrinkle, by the fact that if you look really hard at the Portuguese player, to me, it doesn't seem like it's just glancing off of his head. He's ducking down. And again, this is slowed down. We talked about how this impacts red cards and how it impacts penalties and the VAR and how the head referee is seeing this. But it could be argued that it is intentional. So there's a couple things. Like, I don't know if the Croatian player actually gets a touch, because to go back to the technology, this chip in the ball where it's able to perceive that it's being touched, you see the graph and you see a spike that tells them there's been a touch. But is it the touch on the ball from the cross? Is it the touch on the ball, not from the Croatian that hits his head again, but from the Portuguese player? And then the two touches that lead to the ball eventually in the back of the net. There's a lot of stuff to unpack here. And for them to say with certainty that that is offside because of the denouement, everything that I just said, I don't know if they got it right, quite frankly. And I think, you know, for Croatian fans, it was just devastating at that point because they were pushing and pushing and pushing and created so many opportunities for themselves. I don't know. I don't know where we are at in the game with the VAR, what we talked about yesterday with the decisions on the field and how it leads to doubt, where there's no decisions anymore, where the referees feel fully convinced and have agency in what they're doing because you're going to be questioned at every turn. Now you have technology that's supposed to help things, but to me, it overcomplicates it again because there's not any clarity about the touch on the ball and where it came from within that phase of play.
I was in a bar watching it with, and we had the audio on, but I didn't understand it when they tried to explain it. Jimmy, when you were at the match, could you understand what was going on? Like, how are they trying to, because what Dubs just laid out, it is, you know, Craig always says clear and obvious. And obviously, this is not clear and obvious. How was it explained in stadium? Mm. And because there is a meme of this woman, this blonde Croatian fan, just saying, fuck you. She's literally like screaming her head off at someone saying, she's saying fuck you to somebody.
2845, 2850.
Thank you. Thank you. But what was it? How was it explained in stadium?
Well, you don't, in stadium, you don't see the replay. They don't show you. So everything that's going on, you're just standing there in suspense because everybody's thinking, what's happened? Shows a replay. They don't show it. So you don't know anything until the referee comes back and watches. Now, Maurice's husband, he had it on his phone, so we could go back and we could watch the replay. But inside, they don't show you anything, so you couldn't really see what was going on. But to Dubs's point, you know, when the Portuguese player, he kind of ducks and he heads and he kind of turns because he knows he's made contact, right? And then that's when I thought, okay, well, it's come off of him. He's in that clearing stance where he's leaning towards it and it's just come off his head. So he's trying to attack it and go with the play. And then it glances off his head into the Croatian player. And I thought, because of that moment, I was like, he's onside here because this guy's trying to clear it.
I thought the same.
But again, it's the whole,
because he's moving forward. It's not like he's just standing there and it's just come off him. Yeah. His momentum is down like this and he dips.
So he's passively guilty. He may not be aware of where the ball is, but because his action is in that attacking mode, attacking the ball, you could say that he was actually active.
I think you could make the argument for it, Charm.
It shouldn't be this difficult.
I want to say, from an IFAB standpoint, a refereeing standpoint, how do you argue possession on a header? Like, I mean, yes, there's intent. There's that word again, like whether you're attacking the ball, but I think he expects the Croatian to touch it. I'm not convinced it touches. I found his name. It's Matanovic, who goes up for the header. Mm-hmm. The ball, the technology says that he got a touch to it. So sometimes that you see it happen all the time off of set pieces, off corner kicks, where there's two players, three players come up and they're trying to go for the ball to attack it. And it either glances off somebody or it doesn't touch anybody. And then it really impacts like the secondary ball or the second ball, whether it's touched or not. And sometimes that's where you see the own goal, because then you don't know anything about it until all of a sudden the ball appears. So to Jimmy's point, like that, he's in a stance. It's not like it hits him like in the midsection. He's crouching down, to me, looking at that, anticipating the ball. So if that's not intentional, I don't know what is. The fact that he doesn't attack it and it goes forward, that it's more of like a flick on off the back of his head, maybe changes the argument. But the discussion around coming off your head and whether you have clear possession, to me, I would really like to hear it from a referee.
I don't even understand the rule. Like, if it touched him, that should reset everything, whether it's intent or not intent.
That's not the rule.
That's a dumb rule then.
It has to be like a deliberate, intentional touch. It can't just be a glancing off. Mm.
But this is where VAR just ruins everything. I get it. It's black and white, really, the rule, and yes or no. But that explanation, and we're using chips and balls now and things called SNICO, it's taking away the essence of the game. I mean, we used to be furious at referees, and if there wasn't any of this technology, and the call was made one way or the other, there'd be one set of fans furious with the referee. And I've said it before, I'm much happier being furious at a referee than furious at technology.
Yeah,
just damn, it's human. We're humans. It's a human game. There's mistakes by players, occasionally by referees. It's kind of always been that way, and the game's been just fine. But this is the whole argument against VAR. I mean, it's kind of pointless. All I know is that the theater it took away, dinner last night watching it, with a bunch of media types, and we're all kind of discussing the theater aspect. And it was brought up, well, but this is great theater, as you waited for the... That's not great theater, waiting for a computer image to pop up. It's sport. Theater is what's happening just at that moment, the ability to celebrate something straight away and not know it'll be brought back. Outside of maybe a linesman's flag, it's just killed it. And this isn't being Portuguese bias or Croatian bias is irrelevant in this situation. It's just, I don't know, it could have been, it was frustrating for, I think, all involved at that point. And obviously, yes, there's theater when the final call is made and the Portuguese guys go crazy and the Croatians are crushed. But there's so much that we lose from it.
Charms, Ronaldo's, even going back to your technology, Ronaldo's first goal, which wasn't a goal, you know, his feet were clearly behind the line and his shoulder was forward. And I'm just kind of going, and we were watching with a former CPL player, Quinn, and I forget his last name. Sorry, Quinn. He basically said in CPL that would be a goal. Like with our with Wenger's new rule.
Wenger's
new rule, it would be a goal. And it's so like you're sitting there going, so they're using technology to take goals away. And I don't know if that's like, this is feels very authoritarian and not thoughtful.
Let me ask you this, because I mean the daylight rule, what they're experimenting in CPL, it's gonna result in higher scoring games, right? And I want to see 4-2s and 4-3s. I don't want to see 1-0s and 0-0s. That's me. It's all very subjective and personal. But Jimmy, what about you? You're a football man. Been around the game your whole life at every level. Do you want to see more goals? Are you happy with 0-0s and 1-0s?
No, I want to see more goals. Everybody does. But I can appreciate a 1-0 game as well when two good teams are playing. But I think with it's like anything, you want to see goals, don't you? I mean, that's what the game is about. It's about putting the ball in the back of the net. And the more goals you see, I think the more entertaining the match is, right? Most people would think that way, but I don't mind a 1-0 tight game that's back and forth and two juggernauts going at it. I don't like it when they're both defensive and it's a boring game and, you know, one team squeaks it, then yeah, that's not good for me. But if you're front-footed and you two teams that love to attack and it ends up 1-0, then I'm fine with that. Depends what the game is like, but of course you want to see goals.
I think with VAR, listen, there's still the human element right now, Dubs, even now, is the interpretation of the information they're given. If you're going to go VAR, go full VAR, right? And for that to be successful and worthwhile, you've got to remove the human element. Right? We're imperfect creatures. VAR strives for perfection. Give it over to AI right now. Just give it to them.
Yeah. Did you see the newest robot trying to run up and take a kick? And it tripped over itself and collapsed and didn't touch the ball?
Was
That's
it Scottish?
What we want? I don't know what it was, but it wasn't good.
It was you, Sharms, trying to get exactly. Your shoes.
Yeah. You could well be.
No. You're back.
We started the podcast, and what this podcast is predicated on, what fandom is predicated on, what the beautiful game is predicated on, is the humanity of the thing. And we're removing that from the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I know we want to remove all doubt, but you're almost introducing more with the, you know, variety of technologies that we're trialing, really, because that's what we're doing, right? We're trying to figure out where the errors are, where the wrinkles are, so that we can perfect it. Well, it's always going to be imperfect, no matter what solution you arrive at. And what it does rob somebody like you of, Sharms, is the ability to scapegoat a referee. Like we want that to be clear and obvious.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely.
Speaking of clear and obvious, you want to be able to blame somebody.
I want referees.
And it's easier when it's a human.
Yeah. And I want that person to be unable to ever go to that city ever again for fear of their safety. I want that. That's
that's why Thierry Henry won't go to Dublin.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The handball.
If we had VAR, Ireland would have been in the World Cup.
Yep. Yep, absolutely, right.
Yeah, but the whole thing with this, and we're talking about the daylight offside rule or the current offside rule, can it be better? Yes. But what really chaps my ass, I don't know why I chose that expression.
Your ass.
Yeah, it really does. What really rankles me
is
people who are maybe the casuals who are paying attention to the World Cup because it's happening in their backyard. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what is this offside rule? Like, this is ridiculous. I'm just like, okay. Like, there's a couple of different things there. Like, yes, it's imperfect, but there's the like phase of play, there's this sequence that we just unpacked, which I don't like how that ended up for Croatia and for the game, it has to be said. But offside is offside. Yeah. So like you can't come into it and be like, this is garbage. You know, yeah. No, like it's part of our game. And even though it could be improved, like this is inherent to the game. And if you're a fan, you know that. So like just come into it and try to understand it. Don't just judge it immediately.
Yeah. And with VAR, use VAR. Jimmy, go ahead.
With a daylight offside, I love that. And they use it in the CPL. And I think it's perfect. I think it's what was needed for a long time. It's there. Is there daylight? Yes, sir. You're offside. No daylight? Onside. And it just stops everything. And it gives an advantage as well to strikers. I mean, we've seen it a couple times in the CPL where a guy scored the goal. He's actually behind the defender, but his leg is crossover with the other guy's leg, so he's onside, you know? And it does give advantage. There's been a few goals like that. So I like the daylight rule, I think, and I hope it does come into play.
I don't mind VAR, for offsides. Like I said, that's a simple one, really.
Yeah.
And you can get screaming, oh, it's a toenail, but it's still the rule, right? So he's still offside. It's when it tries to get into that nonsense inside the area, inside the box that we saw yesterday. It's just too much. Jimmy, you want to talk about Spain and how everyone dismissed them. They weren't being talked about given their average group phase play, but this is a team that knows how to peak at just the right time. And we saw them take a massive step yesterday in some performance.
Yeah. You know, when you look at the World Cup, always that first match and all the big hitters, they always tend to struggle a little bit, don't they? We've seen it over the last number of World Cups, France losing a game, Argentina losing, and Spain's drawing matches that they should be winning. But the one thing with the big teams, they just know get to the knockout. And then when the knockout starts, and they've said it themselves, it's game time now. Now the tournament starts for us because it's one shot. You know, you don't got three games to get your points, but they know how to get going. And when I watched Spain yesterday, what a clinic they put on. Rodri and Pedri in the middle of the park are absolutely ridiculous. Just so good. They've got a good tactical plan. They know how they want to play. They play that kind of ticky-tacky, explosive out wide fusion football now. Yeah. And they've just got so much attacking power and pace and energy out wide. The guys in the middle of the park are so smooth and silky on the ball. They showed up yesterday and they look like they're ready to go now. So for me, watch out whoever's playing these guys. These guys
can Portugal.
Play.
Portugal.
What a match. Yeah. What a match that's going to be.
What a match that's going to be. But
do you, I mean, listen, we've got a few days to worry about it, but if you're Portugal, you do want to have some versatility to deal with that.
Yeah.
Gonçalo Ramos comes off the bench, scores a goal. Do you make the call against Spain? Ronaldo wasn't happy when he was pulled off.
No, he had to. But the thing is, what I was going to say there before we get to that was, have you ever seen in a World Cup as many fullbacks scoring goals as this one?
Like, yeah, Porro scored, didn't he?
Porro scores. What's his name from Croatia? Left back, Perisic. Yeah. He ends up scoring. Muniz from Colombia is banging goals left, right, and center. It's the way that they're playing right now. Cucurella. Yes,
you're on one with the pronunciations.
I'm so tired. Cucurella was unbelievable yesterday. Like they're playing like wingers and forwards now. These guys are just up.
Is that
down.
Why you're a fullback, Jimmy? For much of your career,
they join every single attack. Every single attack they're involved, and it's almost like the managers now are just like to the fullbacks, go. We'll have one hold in mid. You sit, keep three at the back. Fullbacks go join the attack. So we overload and we go with numbers, and you just see the fullbacks just hovering around the 18-yard box now, and they're joining in.
Well, it's a great segue actually to our next segment, Wonga. It's a big question, and it's brought to you by, you go ahead.
It's World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim's. Thanks, JC. I was thinking about JC there doing it. But big question.
Do you want to roll the big question?
Yeah.
What's that sound? Big question that needs answering.
What was the question again?
So the question is... The question is, how does Canada beat Morocco? Pretty straightforward. Speaking of fullbacks, right? A couple of decent fullbacks. Morocco, in fact, you could say they're the two best players. Hakimi, Mizrahi.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dubs, how does Canada beat? Let's say Canada's going to win. They've won, in fact. How did they beat Morocco?
Like we're doing post. How did they do it?
Yeah, post. Yeah, yeah. Canada's just won 2-1.
Yeah, I mean,
drama there. Ball got involved.
Who scored?
For Canada?
Yeah.
Laren had a couple, actually.
Oh, okay.
Don't agree with that, or?
No, I like it.
No, I like it. I'm just trying to figure out how we scored.
Two set pieces, though. Eustachio's set pieces were great. Corner and a free kick, and just nodded one home in the first half.
I like this, Sharps. It's so optimistic.
Morocco was pushing late, as they do, but Canada won a free kick deep in their territory. And Eustachio sent one in, and not Kyle again, back post. Great goal.
I like it.
Like it.
Yeah, it's tricky. Like you look at the way that Canada has played this World Cup. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that I don't think we've seen Canada at their best. I think we've seen them in moments do well more often than not when they were chasing something. But they've got to be compact. They've got to be so disciplined, sitting in their shape. And you looked at how they set up. And Jesse Marsh was talking about this yesterday. He's like, listen, it's going to be fluid. It's never like a tactical formation, or your structure is just a starting point. And you're going to change whether you're in possession or out of possession. And there'll be certain nuances and certain things that we're doing versus different opponents. So it's not as simple as Canada in a 4-2-2-2, which you typically do playing under Marsh. So when they were playing against South Africa, they were in a higher line of confrontation, but not necessarily a high press. And you had Eustachio, who was kind of the single pivot versus two in the midfield for South Africa, or two advanced midfielders, and then their deeper one. So three versus two, really, if you looked at how Canada lined up, and almost a diamond shape. And they were trying to trap them and send them to the wings and really try to mitigate that central penetration. I don't know if you can do that versus Morocco, right? So I think that you sit maybe more in a mid block. You're aware of the strength on the wings. But when you look at Morocco, and I think we haven't talked about Bouati enough, this young midfielder, like he's so silky on the ball. They start in a 4-2-3-1. So you do have more players centrally. How does Canada cope with that? So it's not as simple as just push them to the wings and then keep them peripheral. And then that will kind of quell any danger, because we know with Mizrahi and Hakimi, that's not really the case. And then I think your wingers, Jimmy was talking about the matchups with Richie Larea as our left back and Alistair Johnston as our right backs. I think that they have looked very good through this tournament. They've looked very, very consistent. So they're going to be in tough versus those guys flying high for Morocco, because that's what they like to do. But it's also about your wingers, or if we're in a 4-4-2, it's about who's starting out wide. Liam Miller, to me, is probably our best defensive striker. We saw that, he's got a two in like the preparatory matches in the last year where he's flying back. There's that one versus Tunisia where he gets on his bike and he blocks that shot, right? We know that he's got that in his locker. Probably need a moment like that in this match. But what does he give Canada going forward? I don't think it's as much as, say, an Ali Ahmed. So I think Jesse Marsh has some questions that he's got to answer in terms of, do we set up so that we're the most compact and disciplined defensively, airtight that way? Maybe you go with the Miller. I think Tejon stays on. Or do you think about the break? Because that's where they're going to have opportunities. And I think Jonathan David stays there. I think you go with Tanny again up top. But the method in which you do it, I think you absolutely have to stay so compact, sit in your shape, and just try to push them wide and try to get close to the ball. So where you need to see like the Jesse Marsh high tempo aggression is in closing the ball. Whether that's on the counter press, if you're able to get the ball occasionally, then you lose it and then swarm them, or just the pressure on the ball when it goes out wide. But we also have to be clinical. We're not going to get very many opportunities. So when we do get close to their goal, you have to be able to punish when those opportunities arise, because you might only get one or two in the match.
All right, Jimmy. So in that case, so you've got to be clinical. And I agree with what Dub says there, but is Tanny the right choice in that case? over a Kyle if Kyle's healthy. Let's assume everyone's healthy that we know is healthy. Because Tanny will press at a higher rate than Kyle Aaron, but Tanny has not shown the ability to finish those chances, whereas Kyle more so.
Yeah. I mean, me personally, I would put Jonathan David up top and bring in another midfielder in the middle of the park. Mm-hmm. And have three in there, whether it's a Schwenier or whoever.
Like a 4-3-3?
Sergio Saliba and... What's that?
A 4-3-3?
Near enough. Yeah, like but a I 4-2-1. I would like to have, you know, even put Saliba just a little bit in front, put Schwenier and Estecchio just behind them. Let Schwenier kind of be that guy that can go and press and win the ball, but at least you're overloading in the middle of the park. You got three guys that can do the dirty work, keep the play out wide, try to contain them. That's what I would do something like that. I would change it up a little bit. He's going to put Tanny up top. He's going to be chasing the back line. Then you're going to have Jonathan David in that role where, you know, you got to remember the tempo and speed of play that Morocco play at. It's incredible at times. And you can press all you want. We saw it with Brazil and other teams that try to press them. They can play out of it. They play just as fast as they press. Mm-hmm. They're a good team. And you know, you've got to be on the ball for 90-odd minutes with this Moroccan side. They're the real deal.
I got a feeling Nico might get in there. The way Jesse Marsh was talking this week, and obviously you take everything he says with a grain of salt, but he was all about Nico Seguir and what he can bring to that midfield and, you know, what we saw in just, 30 minutes or so against South Africa, which, in fairness, like, nothing close to Morocco. Maybe that's because Schwenier had his opportunity, right? Didn't really grasp it. And even Saliba, Dubs, I mean, he's been fine. Couple mm-hmm. of really great moments, an incredible free kick goal, the assist, of course, and the promised David goal. But I wouldn't say he's grasped that position yet either, despite those two moments.
No, but I think he might be the most complimentary of the midfielders with Eustachio. What I loved about Seguir, and I was loud about this on One Soccer, and Kyle Becker was on as well, who's a midfielder himself and knows absolutely what he's talking about. But what Eustachio or the insertion of Seguir allowed Eustachio to do was to get into more advanced positions. That's why he was just outside the 18, right, to finish that. And Seguir is also a more defensive-minded guy who can come up with your tackles, with your recoveries. He was on a yellow. He had to be careful, right? Like he had that crunching tackle and maybe a little bit of a tactical foul, maybe 5 or 6 minutes after he was inserted. But he also had 5 passes in a final third. Like he's also the guy that sparked that play in the right channel after Alphonso Davies kind of drew everybody over on the left. Like he's the one that played in Schaffelberg. So I think there's complementary aspects to his game there. Even after I said Saliba is the most complementary to Eustachio. But I just think Jimmy is Jesse Marsh likely to do that. Like if we look at the way Morocco lines up, maybe optimally for Canada, you need another body in there to contend with their midfield, to contend with the numbers in there so you don't get overrun in the middle of the park. Is he likely to do that, though? He might tweak, but that's a pretty big tweak to throw in an extra midfielder when he hasn't really done it.
Mm. Yeah. Experiment now is dangerous, right?
I think there was one time where he did it with Oso. They put Oso in that position.
But like late in the game.
Yeah.
Not to start,
no. So, I don't know. You know, as a manager as well, especially knockout football, you get one shot at this, and I think you've got football intelligence within that squad that can play in that situation or that role if asked to do so. Because you got to think every player plays different formations wherever they are or throughout their career. And if you want to overload a middle and you say, okay, listen, we're going to put a midfielder here. You know, Jonathan David, you're going up top as a nine. You play a little bit higher up. Let these guys behind you do all the dirty work. And then we'll try to spring forward with an attack when we get it. But I would like to see them kind of control the middle and try to bring another midfielder on just so that we don't get an overrun. And then, look, and there's nothing against, you know, Jonathan David. He's not that pit bull in the middle of the park that you need sometimes. Mm-mm. Right? He scores goals. That's what he does. So I mean, yeah. Put him up a little bit higher. Tanny, you know, he needs three or four chances to score one. And how many chances are you really going to get against Morocco?
Yeah. So, and how many minutes do you think that promise has in him now, Jimmy? Do you think that he can give Jesse Marsh at least a half, maybe closer to an hour? Do you think that's too optimistic?
I would like to see him get 45 if he could. But if he can't do the 45, again, you're going to probably see him at 20, 30. Right? But
you see, the best performance under Marsh, arguably, has been that Romania match last summer, a 3-0 win in Romania. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not comparing Romania to Morocco, but looking at the 11 for that, you have Max in goal, Richie, Luke, and DC centre-backs, and Sigur at right-back. And then the midfield was Stax and Kone with Ali and Buchanan, and it was John David and Tanny up front. Mm. How often do managers reflect on previous performances like a year ago when they everything seemed to just click properly? Is that too much water under the bridge since then? Is irrelevant? Or does he fall back on what worked that night?
I mean, I was going to defer to you, Jimmy, there as a coach, but I know as a player, I've had coaches where you have reference points, right? Whether it's a defensive performance, whether it was a masterclass in finishing and attacking fluidity, like whether it's a half an hour or it's a comprehensive 90-minute performance, there are ones that are touchstones for you as players, but also as a team. And it doesn't mean that you're living in the past, but you can be like, remember that feeling, remember that intensity? Do you remember the way that we attacked that game? And it was for reasons X, Y, Z. Like, it could be brought in, you know, or certain, you know, tactical nuances to Jimmy's point, if Oso's brought in as an extra midfielder, it could be something like that they're referring to. And then you're layering on top of it because of the needs for this particular match and the matchups all over the pitch. But like Jimmy's point that he continually makes about having defenders, whether it's a Moise Bumbido or a Luc de Fougerolle or a Derek Cornelius, you need to have players who are going to be pacey and quick, but love to defend when they're isolated 1v1. And that has to be Canada all over the pitch versus Morocco. And I feel like in this game, like we can almost take inspiration, not because we held them, quote unquote, to 2-1 4 years ago in Qatar, but Morocco back then were a team that were much more comfortable out of possession and really dictated and were kind of belligerent, organized, really absorbed the pressure, and then were very kind of succinct and direct in the way that they attacked. And I think Canada can do that. You know, if you're highly organized mid-block, you spend a tremendous amount of time out of possession through your defensive structure, you can still dictate terms to the opponent. It's going to be very difficult versus Morocco, who are outstanding, right? Like, full respect to them. It's going to be a really tough match. But if Canada is able to frustrate them just by their shape, then they can maybe take it to them when they do have the opportunities on the break.
Yeah, Morocco's, they're not unbeatable. No one is, apart from France. Maybe Spain now.
Good point.
Yeah.
Right? But they're not. I mean, they're obviously the better team. They're obviously the favorites. They're obviously a team that can contend to win this entire tournament. But like we said last show, you know, it is easy to start elevating them to a level that not even they can reach. That's what we do as sports fans, right? Mm-hmm. But you can get to them. Yep. That being said, it'd be an enormous shock if Canada found a way to get to them. But hey, guess we'll find out on Saturday. I think tomorrow morning we have a show.
Yeah. And update show.
Yeah, let's get a comment show going, shall we? Yeah. What about this game? Haven't done that for a while. We've covered a lot of angles here. So we'll put it to you, the listener, to comment wherever you want to comment on our Patreon, on our various social channels, wherever you want. Give us your thoughts and questions about specifically Canada, but go where you want.
Well, also, Sharms, it's Promise David's birthday today.
Yeah.
It is.
Canada Soccer put that out. But it also is Lindsay Lohan's. So congratulations to both of them.
Oh, don't tell me my favorite
people.
How old is she?
I think 57.
She's going on 68. Yes.
She's lived the life of a 68-year-old.
That's right. I just wanted to add, I don't know if I said it here, if I said it somewhere else, but the two goals that we conceded versus Morocco was a howler by Borean, right?
Right.
Terrible error. Mm-hmm. like that net just gaping. And then it was a ball over the top where he didn't have the speed in the back line. Now we have Max and we also have a back line with pace.
Guaranteed win. They're right there. There's your reason. Much better team.
Done.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone. Look back tomorrow. Enjoy today's matches. Cheers for listening. Bye.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com to sign up for our newsletter.
Nice.
Great show, everybody. Good show.
Good show.